And good morning, Bruce.
And good morning, Cora, and good morning, listeners. Wonderful to have your company on Thursday, the 15th of April. Wow, isn't the year racing by? And, of course, it's the second week of the school holidays, so parents, grandparents, and kids, if you're listening today, I hope those school holidays are going really well for you. It was a great weekend last weekend with the exhibition at Tarawarra and on the Saturday, and then on Sunday we had the Healesville Mini Film Festival, three great films there. And if you're into exhibitions and festivals, of course, Kate Baker is starting with an exhibition this coming Saturday. Opens at 3:30 p.m. at Yering Station in Yarra Glen. And you can hear all about that on Art Journal at 11 o'clock with Cora's on this morning. Well, today we have someone all the way from Andamooka on Zoom. Now, I had to ask this person where Andamooka was, and I'm reliably told that it's about 200 kilometres north of Port Augusta. Okay, so you don't know where Port Augusta is. Well, it's in South Australia, and that's a couple of hundred k's north of Adelaide. So basically what we're saying is it's a long way from anywhere. But all the way from Andamooka on Zoom this morning, it is our very own Megan Buntine. Hi, Megan. How are things in South Australia?
Hi, Bruce. Things in South Australia are pretty good. A little bit warmer than down in Melbourne, but still a bit cloudy. So,
yes, you've started quite a journey there, about a 3-month journey. We're delighted that you've managed to squeeze Yarra Valley FM into your weekly schedule and kept in touch with us. And because you've been on the program, you know, a few times now, I reckon I'm going to put you on the spot and say, why don't you, for those listeners who haven't heard you before, tell us something about Megan Buntine that people listening today wouldn't know. There you go, something that you've been keeping secret all these years.
I think what a lot of people wouldn't know about me is that I've ridden a motorcycle over the highest motorable road in the world, which is in northwest India.
Wow.
So there you go. Okay. Looking out over to Tibet in the far distance at the top of that road.
That is impressive. That is very impressive. I do have a motorbike license, Megan, but I'd have trouble getting out of the driveway at the moment. So especially because I haven't got a motorbike, which you have.
Yeah, doesn't get out as often as it should, though.
That's terrific. And as those of you who have heard Megan before will know, she is an amazing resource for us in terms of strategic planning, governance for community groups, not-for-profit organisations, has some amazing resources, which we'll talk about after a while. But today we thought, because it's a topic that is just so important to community groups, that we would again refocus on fundraising and financial sustainability for community groups and organisations. And so this morning's program is entitled The Four Steps to Financial Sustainability, brackets, for your not-for-profit or community group. So the four steps of financial sustainability, and we're going to give you some clues as we go along on what those might be. But Megan, let's start with the very term fundraising. It starts with fun at the beginning, but actually for most community groups, it's not fun at all. Would that be right?
Yeah, look, I think certainly the groups and organisations that I talk to, fundraising and financial sustainability is one of the biggest strategic challenges I think that they face, which I think is why it's worth us having this conversation more than once, because it's just about refreshing and reminding people and giving people sort of new ideas to think about, because, you know, so many of our organisations run on the smell of an oily rag, so
yes,
they can be creative about bringing new revenue streams into their organisation. It can make things a bit easier. And as you say, you know, let's try and make it fun. I'll talk a little bit when we sort of go through ways of fundraising, and really a fun, crazy way that we did some fundraising as an organisation that I was part of the board a few years ago. So, yeah, if you can make it fun, it makes it a little bit less of a drudge. But it's a really important part of what we do. It really comes back to, you know, if you think about why it's so important, it's about ensuring that we can do whatever our organisation is put in place for. So it comes back to that purpose. What's our purpose and how do we bring the resources into our organisation to enable us to deliver that purpose, that, you know, that value that we add to our community through our organisation?
So listeners, we're giving you four hooks this morning to remember the key principles and tricks of successful fundraising. And the first one is the why, the W-Y. And it is about that purpose, Megan. It's before we talk about the reason that we're actually trying to raise money, it actually goes to the purpose of the organisation, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you think about, I'll use my Landcare background as an example again. You know, when I was the president of our local Landcare group, it's about what are we here for? Well, we've decided that our purpose is to eradicate blackberries in the bush and get on top of the rabbit problem and encourage people to, you know, revegetate, you know, land that's been degraded over time. So, you know, that's really what our purpose is. So everything we do comes back to trying to achieve those sorts of things. And so, therefore, you know, we need to raise money to enable us to be able to do that.
Yes, and I've heard it sort of described various ways, Megan, but that, you know, that some people talk about having a 2-minute elevator speech that you can describe the purpose of your organisation, or being able to put it into 50 words, you know, perhaps in a funding application. You know, why does your organisation exist? Why was it established? What, you know, why are you there? Why does your group, whatever your group is, even, you know, why do you continue to meet and exist and do your stuff? Yeah,
absolutely. And I think, you know, for any incorporated association, that's pretty straightforward. You just need to go to your rules, and your statement of purpose is spelled out within those rules. And I think that, you know, that sort of as a bit of an aside, when you're creating those rules, try and make your statement of purpose reasonably succinct. You know, I've seen some of them that are more than a page long.
Like, yeah.
That's getting a little bit too wordy.
Which is like change the world. We want to change the world or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Just sort of make it quite broad, because, you know, bearing in mind the fact that anything you do has to fit within those statement of purposes. So if you make it quite broad, around obviously whatever area it is you're working in, it gives you scope to sort of do new things over time potentially too.
Hmm. So our first hook, Megan, the why, is I think what we're saying is that as you think about sourcing funds or you know, getting resources, that you have to think about, why are you actually writing this funding application? Why are you trying to raise these funds? And we'll talk about how we're going to do it in a moment. But I think what we're saying is that has to be aligned with what our strategy and our purpose is.
Absolutely. And, you know, increasingly I'm having organisations coming to me and saying, can you help us put a strategic plan in place, because our funding body requires us to have one to go with our grant application, so you can demonstrate to the funder how your request for some of their money ties in with your overall strategy, ties in with your overall purpose. So, you know, your strategic plan, your strategy, whatever you call it, that needs to tie back to your statement of purposes, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
You know, it's sort of like a chain, really, get back to that purpose again.
Yes, otherwise you're wasting your time. So that's the first key point today. Know the why. Why do you exist, and why are you trying to get some money? Sorry to do this to you, Megan, but one of my favourites is ABBA's Money, Money, Money. So let's whet our appetites, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the ways, you know, just how do we go about it.
Rich man's world. on mine. Ain't it sad? And if he happens to be free, I bet he wouldn't fancy me. That's too bad. So I must leave. I'll have to go to Las Vegas or Monaco and win a fortune in a game. My life will never be the same.
Bruce Argyle, and my very special guest via Zoom all the way from Andamooka in South Australia is Megan Buntine. And Megan and I are talking about fundraising, securing funding for your amazing organisation. And we've talked about the first point, the why. Why do we exist and why do we want some resources? And now we're going to talk about the ways, Megan, the ways that we can actually get some funds. Your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, people are probably used to hearing me talk about planning and being strategic. Well, this is just another example of, I think, where you need to be strategic. So you've got your overall strategy, but one of the pillars within that is being is having some sort of a financial sustainability strategy, which looks at and spells out the different things that you're going to pursue. So, for example, when I recently went through this sort of a process with an organisation, I got each of their executive team to brainstorm for me before the session, what are, if we had no limits, if we had no barriers, what are all the possibilities that we could pursue to bring revenue into our organisation? And it's like, let's be crazy here.
Sky's the limit.
Absolutely. And then we sort of, we got together, we compiled all of their individual thoughts, and then just really distilled that down. And it came through with a great list. And I said to them in the end in the workshop, okay, of all of these things, you now have to pick six. Which six do you think are going to be the most effective? And then we sort of went from there. So I think you start big, bring in all the possibilities, and then drill it down to, okay, which things are going to give us the biggest bang for our buck, so to speak.
Fantastic. And Megan, we're not going to have time to talk about all of those six or 66 that we might have, but let's look at a few. Let's start internally in the organisation, and we'll go external after that. So let's start internally. I guess one way of raising funds for an organisation is to have a membership fee, or perhaps to have some fees for services provided. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I think membership fees is good to sort of keep things ticking along in a small way, but I think if we're thinking big and we've got big budgets that we need to meet, we need to look beyond just the membership fees. So things like, for example, recently I've been doing some work with a men's shed, which is quite a big active men's shed, and they have a program where they make toys at Christmas time, and they sell them through local networks.
Yeah, those are great. Those are great. They're the little wooden toys, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, we went through a process actually with them as well of picking what were the top four things they thought they could do to bring revenue into the organisation. So, you know, things like that. What can we generate? How can we add value internally? Or it might be that you've got something in terms of your knowledge or your skills internally that you can actually monetize that somehow. So is it our intellectual property that we can sell as a resource, or do we have skills and expertise that we can turn into a training course that we can offer as a fee-for-service sort of a model? So, yeah, what have we got internally that we can create value out of?
Terrific. So that's that's number one, Megan. Let's go number two, which would be fundraising via events and activities. You know, a sponsored walk or a fundraising breakfast or that sort of thing. Your thoughts about those?
I heard a fabulous quote a few years ago when I was doing some work with Kathy McGowan, our independent member for Indi, and I can't remember what it was word for word, but it was down the vein of so much of our communities have been built on raffles and cake stalls. And so I think, you know, the old tradition of raffles and cake stalls, there's still some value in that, particularly if you can come up with a good prize pool for a raffle that you can offer for people and bring them in. You're talking about, you know, walkathons and things like that. I'll tell you a funny story. When I was on the board of Rivers and Ranges Community Leadership Program, we did a walkathon, but it was a walkathon with a difference, and we called it the Great Chicken Race. And so those of us who walked all got dressed up as chickens, and we walked 5Ks.
I like it already.
Yeah, we walked 5Ks along the rail trail out at Yay. And so our pitch to our donors and our sponsors was, well, my pitch at least was, would you pay $50 to see me walk 5Ks dressed as a chicken? And as a result of that, you know, people were coming out of the woodwork, funnily enough.
So
it comes back to the fun thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I bet you raised quite a bit. It wouldn't have been a paltry amount.
And we had all those puns going on today. It was a really good fun day, fun fundraising.
Wow, I would have paid that too. Megan, a third one would be to get support from businesses or we often talk about corporate sponsorship or support, don't we?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I went to a seminar a few years ago on this topic, and what they were saying, you know, the old way of having sort of the bronze, the silver and the gold sponsorship, that's sort of a bit passe now. It's really about identifying who is a potential sponsor that really their values as an organisation aligns with yours, and they would see value in partnering with you and having their name associated with you or your name associated with them. And it's really about tailoring what is the offering for them and therefore what is the return that they're going to give you. And look, it may not necessarily all be financial either. It might be in kind. It might be use of a space. It might be
volunteering or something.
Mm. Yeah, volunteering. You know, the corporate volunteers are a great, way. I know up in our area post the 2009 bushfires, we had organisations like the ANZ Bank and Origin Energy, I think was another one, there was a few of them that came up, and they have a program where their staff get 1 or 2 days a year that they are required to, you know, they're still paid as if they're in the office, but they leave the office and they go out and they do some volunteering work.
Fantastic.
So those sorts of things are really new. And I think the way we think about fundraising has changed significantly over the years, and it's about tapping into the new way of thinking. There's websites. You know, I've seen a few around, you know, 101 fundraising ideas, that sort of thing. So if you Google that and jump on there, there's some really new and innovative ways. And I think it's the innovative ways that really capture people's attention and interest, and you're more likely to get some support there.
Fantastic. The last two that I have on my list, Megan, are community grants, like from councils or community banks or Rotary and so on. And also then, of course, you know, grants from philanthropic trusts and foundations. And we're going to spend a bit of time about both of these. But just by way of introduction, Megan, before we go to a song.
You probably be better at this than I am in terms of knowing there's, I think it's something like $2 billion a year in Australia that goes through philanthropic trusts.
Yes.
I can't remember the exact figure, but it's a huge amount of money. So how can we tap into those sorts of organisations, whether they're community foundations, organisations, you know, through the banks and those sorts of organisations. There's lots, AMP is another one I just saw come out on an email the other day there, their grant programs. So there's lots and lots of grant programs out there. If you can, I don't know about others, but I certainly finding them in the first instance is the biggest challenge.
The more
we can share ideas and share resources with across different organisations, the better it is to enable us to find these things.
You're listening to Megan Buntine, and we're talking, well, the four steps to financial sustainability. We've talked about the why do we exist even, and why are we trying to get funds. We've talked about now some of the ways, and after our next song, we're going to come back and talk about the wheres. Where do we go? Where are the go-to places that Megan's just referred to that might be a good starting point? So, well, Megan, I had to do this. It's Simply Red and Money's Too Tight. And how's your 15th of April going? We've only got 10 days till Anzac Day. Wow, that's amazing. And in 2 weeks' time, that is Thursday the 28th, my very special guest here on Community Conversations is going to be the amazing Bob Gannaway. And Bob's going to be talking about the RSL, Anzac Day, and the 80th anniversary of the Rats of Tobruk. Maybe you haven't heard of the Rats of Tobruk, but That is an amazing story. So mark that in your diary. It's 2 weeks from today, and it's Thursday the 28th of April. Closer to home, after the 11 o'clock news today, Cora Zon is going to be talking with the amazing Kate Baker about her Yering Station exhibition, which opens this Saturday at 3:30. And right now, I'm talking with Megan Buntine, all the way from Andamooka, South Australia. And someone has just asked for Megan's details, and it's www.mjbconsulting.net.au, or you can send Megan an email all the way to Andamooka, megan@mjbconsulting.net.au. And on her website, we're not going to be talking about that this morning, but there are all sorts of resources for community groups, not-for-profits around strategy, planning, good governance, and might even be some stuff on fundraising. I'm not sure, Megan. But anyway, let's go back to fundraising. We're talking today about the four steps of financial sustainability. We've talked about why do we exist? Why do we want money? We've talked about some of the ways that we can get resources from internal membership activities, corporates and grants. And now we're going to talk about where. Just where do we go? Where do we start? Where do we start that journey if we've got these amazing things that we're doing, Megan? We know we need some resources, so just where do we start? What would you be saying as a starting point, Megan? It's a bit of a minefield out there, isn't it?
Yes, where? That's the million-dollar question, pardon the pun. I think that's the biggest challenge. Certainly, that's the biggest challenge, finding the grant in the first place, finding the funding source in the first place. Once I've found it, I can usually apply reasonably at a level of success. But I think there's a few places that are my go-to places, or I would suggest other people to check out. Letter, which is just amazing. It's very comprehensive to the point where it's sometimes a lot of information to digest. It's something you have to sign up to. There's 11 monthly newsletters a year, and I think it's about $85 to sign up to that. You will get you'll get notification of all the current grants in your state and nationally that you can apply to. So great resource.
Wow.
If you don't have the time to go through a huge resource like that every month, there is a group down in Gippsland called Grants Only Group. They're a not-for-profit themselves. Their whole purpose, we talked about purpose before, their purpose is to help the rest of us find the funding to do the projects that we want to do.
I like that.
Yeah, they're great. So they are hooked in with a number of funding sources and resources, like the monthly funding newsletter from our community. So they are going through the 60 or 70 or 80 pages each month that comes out from our community, and a whole range of other resources. So they will, if you register your project with them, there's a small fee associated with that, but they will go on the hunt for you and try to help you find a suitable grant to go for your project. If you need support to actually write the grant application as well, they will do that with you.
Wow,
too.
It's getting better all the time, Megan.
Absolutely. And then if you're successful, there's a small fee, a secondary fee if you're then successful, which, you know, I can't remember exactly how much it was, but it wasn't huge. Quite frankly, I'd be quite happy to go and flip sausages at Bunnings to earn money to pay them to find a big grant.
Hey, Megan, would it be fair to say, would it be fair to say, though, that the most important thing at the very beginning is trying to align what you are looking for support for with what the funder is wanting to fund?
Absolutely, and it's a really good point to make. I think you really need to look at the grant guidelines for any grant you're considering before you put the time and effort into applying for it, just to make sure that it's the right fit. I would also highly recommend a phone call to the granting body to have a conversation with them, to just double check that, yes, your project is something that they would consider. And also, I think if you've made that connection with them, then if they've got 50 grants sitting in front of them and you've already got a connection with them, yours is going to stand out that little bit more. So there's a bit of a sneaky aspect to that, but I think it's good sneaky. Sneaky for the right purpose.
And Megan, a five-minute phone call to ascertain whether you would be eligible, whether you meet the criteria and so on, instead of spending 4 or 6 hours on a funding application that is going to be actually unsuccessful.
Yeah, or not eligible even. Mm. So I think that's a really good point to make. So we've got our community funding newsletter. We've got Grants Only Group, Jen in Gippsland. I think another really good resource is often that local councils will have a grants officer. They will have a mailing list. I know I'm on the mailing list for Murrindindi and also for Yarra Rangers. They send out regular emails with information about grants. So, again, they're looking at all those other resources. So they're funneling that information into you. Helen Haynes is my local federal MP up in the Indi electorate. She has a great page on her website, a great grant page on her website, and it's not just for her constituents, it's for anyone. She actually ran some fundraising webinars, grant webinars late last year, and she had people from all over the country zooming into those webinars. So it was about focusing in on where can we get the money to do the community projects that we want to achieve through our organisation.
And Megan, to that, I know the Shire of Yarra Rangers right now has community grants that are open. I don't remember the details, but around volunteers and Safe Place and post-COVID and other grants. So absolutely what you're saying is really good advice.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, look at government, too. The federal government's got a huge grant pool. State government has different grant pools. Post-COVID, for example, post-bushfires, natural disasters, all those sorts of things, the government's always putting money into community recovery and community support. So there's lots of opportunities there. And even, you know, not necessarily around disaster recovery, but you've got organisations like FRRR, so that's the Foundation for Rural and Regional Renewal. They have, yes, they do have disaster recovery funds, but they also have funds that are for just rural and regional areas because they recognise that communities in the sort of out of the city necessarily need a bit more support perhaps. But then there's other organisations that focus on the urban areas as well. There's other philanthropic bodies that will focus on, you know, whether it's place-based funding or whether it's around a particular need. So, you know, someone like yourself who's got the background with Philanthropy Australia is a really good resource too.
Thanks, Megan. Hey, you are listening to Megan Buntine, and we are talking ways of securing funding. We've entitled this morning's session the 4 W's to financial sustainability. We've talked about the why does your group exist? Why are you looking for funding? We've talked about the ways of getting that funding, either internally or externally. We've just talked briefly now about where do we start, where do we look, where do we try and get those funds. And after our next song, we're going to come back and talk about the what. So what do we do, which means, you know, what do we put on the paper when we're asking for these funds and so on. So, Megan, this is Cindy Lauper, and money changes everything.
Doesn't it? We'll be right back.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
And we're talking this morning the four W's to financial sustainability for your community group or not-for-profit organisation. My very special guest, all the way from Andamooka in South Australia, where she's travelling, is Megan Buntine. And Megan, we've talked about the why, the ways, and the where. Now I think it's pretty important we talk about the what. But before we do that, some of you very astute listeners may have picked up a slight tapping noise in the background occasionally on the program this morning. I know some of you are very keen and are already starting on your typing your funding application. Well, it's not that. What it is Morse code, just letting you know, in case you are having trouble picking up the signal from Andamooka, we're Morse coding it to you as well. And if you believe that, I've got a car to sell you. Let's go back to the what of fundraising. And Megan, it all comes down to, well, what we put on the paper, doesn't it? What we ask for.
Yeah, it sure does. And I think that sometimes people are a bit afraid of actually writing the application. It feels a bit overwhelming. I think the message loud and clear from so many philanthropic organisations is that it doesn't need to be a perfect piece of writing. They just need to have a good understanding of what it is that you want. It can be scratched out in a few words, but it's about the core of what you're asking for. So you might write a thesis and they still don't understand what you're asking for. So keep it simple, keep it brief, stick to the point, answer the questions. You know, they'll often have next to each question, they might have an example response. So really focus on answering the questions as they're asked and doing it as succinctly as you can.
Because most of the applications these days, Megan, are online applications, and we're typing into a box. We're asked to limit it to 50 words or 100 words or 200 words. That's more common now, isn't it?
Often that's the case, yes. And I think that's exactly why, because they don't want a thesis, because they have to read it. Not only do we need to write it, but they need to read it. So often they have a number of applications they need to get through, so it all takes time. So if you can get it across in as few words as possible, that sort of harks back to your elevator speech that you referred to before. You know, get it out, get the essence of what you're trying to ask for, tell them how it's going to meet their needs as well, because clearly, you know, they've got things that they want to achieve through their funding. So if you can demonstrate to them how your project will help them deliver on their purposes, in fact, that's important. So I guess the key around it is don't be afraid of the process. It's just once you get into it and you've done a few, you'll find that they are quite similar from one to the next. And as you said, a lot of them are using the online platforms these days, and they're very, very similar from one to the next often.
Megan, what are your thoughts about there are some questions, as you say, that are, you know, quite common on a funding application. For example, tell us about your organisation, you know, summarise the aim of your project that you're asking for funding for or something. What are your thoughts about, two things here. One is having a bit of a script that you can edit and use again and again and again. And secondly, your thought about bouncing it off someone else just to get an opinion on whether it makes sense?
Yeah, look, I think that having some standard paragraphs that you can just cut and paste into those generic questions is good. I think it's a trap to do it for the more specific stuff, though, and I certainly know I've been told by funding bodies that they don't like to see a standard letter of support that is just, you know, say from the CEO of the local council saying, you know, we support Healesville Toastmasters in this grant application, and then you just photocopy that basically for every grant you go for.
Yeah, they hate that, don't they?
Yes, and also each letter of support having the same wording but just with a different signature and a different letterhead on it. So even if it's a case of talking to each time you go for a grant application, going back to that person saying, look, can you just give me, even if you write the words for them and tell them what it is that needs to say, but it's tailored to that particular granting body and that particular grant. It's up to date, make sure the dates on it are current, just simple stuff like that.
Fantastic. Megan, we are rapidly running out of time. We've talked about the why, the ways, the where, and the what. What else do you think is important? Sorry, excuse the bad pun. What is important under the what? What else do you think is important?
Yeah. Look, another thing that I see starting to happen commonly, and it's certainly something that I talk to about the organisations that I work with, is giving somebody on your board or your committee of management a dedicated role, a portfolio role as the grant person or, the fundraising person. So they're the person who, they might be the one who's preparing the grant application on behalf of the organisation. They're the ones who are out there chasing, finding where all these, those billions of dollars worth of grants are located. Maybe build up a spreadsheet of regular grants so that have the opening dates listed so that you can go through and what's coming up next month. Okay, there's a grant over here. We need to put something in for that and so forth. So I think, I've always been one to say that on a committee or on a board, you should have portfolio roles for the people who are not your treasurer or your secretary or your president, for example. And this is a key example, a perfect example of the sort of thing I'm talking about.
Megan, we're almost out of time. I'm going to give your website just for people who want to follow up and look at some of the resources you do have for community groups. So it's mjbconsulting, that's all one word, .net.net.au. And you can send Megan an email, megan@mjbconsulting.net.au, if you'd like to make contact. We're going to have a final song and then we're going to come back and wrap it up. And looks like the Flying Lizards.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money, that's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money. Get everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money.
Thanks for joining us this morning for Community Conversations. If you've missed the program or missed part of it, it will be podcast for us by the amazing Greg here and available on the Yarra Valley FM website very shortly. So my guest this morning, all the way from Andamooka, thank you so much, Megan. It's been wonderful to have you zooming in. We've had wonderful reception apart from that tapping noise there for a little while. I'm not sure what was going on there.
Thank you. It's been great to speak to you again today.
Fantastic. And if you're taking it away this morning, we've talked about the four W's to financial sustainability, the why, the ways, the where, and the what. Have a look at the podcast if you missed it or if you need to have a refresher. We'll see you back the same time, same place next Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. And before I sign off, I have to just say that we are going to have Megan back on next month, and we're going to be talking about the people resources. So we've talked about the financial resources, but what about the people? Where do they fit in, and how do we maximise, and how do we work together and be a team and all that? Megan, that'll be fun.
Yeah, that'll be a great conversation, I'm sure.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week.